Hello there, I'm Ed Butler. Welcome to Business Daily from the BBC, where today we're going airborne.
3, 2, 1.
Come on.
This thing has the wingspan of an airliner and is going to fly on roughly the power of 3 blow dryers.
Yes, one of the new generation of unmanned aircraft drones promising to revolutionize internet provision in Africa. But is there a downside to the drone revolution?
There has been a regulatory vacuum. Frankly, without rules, there's just been a lot of misuse of drones, and the ability to be able to take over a drone or physically stop a drone where there are security risks, this is key.
Drones and how to handle them in Business Daily from the BBC. Unmanned supermaneuverable flying machines. The basic technology has been there for decades, but the new generation of aircraft have become so much cheaper, so much smarter, so much more reliable, they could be about to transform all kinds of sectors, from transport to telecoms. More on that in a moment, but first let's hear from the BBC's Zoe Kleinman. Yesterday, you will remember, she was here on Business Daily explaining all kinds of exciting new kit at the Global Consumer Electronics Trade Show, CES, in Las Vegas. Today, we've sent her out of town to the Nevada desert to watch a state-of-the-art drone rodeo.
I've left Las Vegas. I'm in the middle of the desert. There's mountains in the background. There's a lot of electricity pylons. I'm on a dirt track where I'm watching some drones racing, well, above what looks like a bit of tarmac. It kind of looks like a traditional racetrack, except obviously nothing's actually on it. I've come to the CES 2017 Drone Rodeo to try out a few drones.
My name is Matt Sloan, and I'm the CEO of Atlanta Drone Group and the executive producer of the Drone Rodeo.
Here we are in the middle of a slightly windy, quite cold desert, and there's all sorts of little drone copters buzzing around us here. What's the appeal?
I think they're an amazing tool. It started as a hobby for me. I spent many years as a producer at CNN, and when I saw what you could do from the air, it really just gave a whole new dimension to the production that I was trying to do. And then I actually went out on my own and started this business. Now everything from industrial surveying and mapping to firefighting and law enforcement, film and television, you can really do it all and with the same equipment.
The top range drones are really quite expensive still. Do you think we're going to see prices come down anytime soon?
I think we have already seen prices come down. I know when I got my first drone, it was, you know, well over $1,000. You can get a very capable drone now for $600 or $700. Even the top end stuff that we're using now for a lot of the industrial work is really $5,000 to $6,000, not $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 like they used to be.
Can I have a go?
Absolutely. This is Zoe from the BBC.
Oh, hi.
And she wants to fly a drone. So,
okay. We're about to do that right now.
On the screen here, what we're able to see is the actual image from the camera, but what we're able to do is tap zoom to a certain point.
Oh, that picture is absolutely amazing.
And she goes all the way back out.
How much does it cost?
It's $9,000.
Wow.
$9,000.
I am now in control, am I?
Yeah.
So I'm holding a sort of, it looks a bit like a computer game console,
it does.
Doesn't it?
Yep. So the remote itself is very capable. This is right now is running in full GPS, which means that you really don't have to control it. That's why she stays still up there.
Yeah, it's
But if we want to move it forward, we can push this.
Oh, if I stop, oh no, it's wobbling.
Yep.
Why is it wobbling?
And then it just how she flies.
I don't want it to come down too far.
Yeah, not too fast.
I love the fact
you call
her she.
Yeah, oh yeah, they're all she's.
They're all
yeah,
she's.
Yeah, they're all she's.
All right.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm JT Von Lunen, the president and founder of Rocky Mountain Unmanned Systems. What I'm showing you today is a thermal camera. This is one of the first cameras that has been used for thermal imaging. We have a lot of fire departments using them for search and rescue operations, as well as different tactical procedures to see their firefighters on the ground. Also, they're used for roof inspections, solar panel inspections, inspections of cell towers and electrical lines. Not a lot of the public knows about this. It is used extensively in the military, but each day we get more and more different fields coming into this. We've also done some imaging of dairy cows to see if there are any infections in the udders, as well as when they're ready to breed. And we were able to determine one cow was in heat because it was about 3 degrees warmer than the cows around it with the thermal imaging camera.
You are quite hamstrung, though, aren't you, by very strict regulation here in the U.S.?
You know, as long as you're flying within the boundaries, which we think are fairly fair, I don't think that anything that's come out is prohibiting anyone from flying. I think that the main restrictions now are in major metropolitan areas. But outside of that, whether they're in suburban areas or rural areas, this is catching on very, very quickly.
drone maker JT Vonlin, and speaking to Zoe Kleinman. He's not the only one, though, celebrating the drone's liftoff. The sound of a literal launch there. Facebook's thumping music promoting its enormous new drone, Aquila. Wingspan more than 40 metres longer than a jumbo jet's. We watch as it surges up into the Arizona sky. The eventual aim here is to join a fleet of other super large drones flying in the stratosphere some 20,000 metres up in the air, staying aloft potentially for months at a time, powered by solar panels. The long-term idea is to beam the internet free of charge to underdeveloped regions like Africa, where the physical cable infrastructure for the web just isn't there. I spoke about this and some of the other beneficial applications for drones with Dr. Mirko Kovac. He's director of the Aero Robotics Lab at Imperial College London.
I think it is a very powerful idea. So instead of building infrastructure on the ground, we can think to build aerial infrastructure that is done by the drones, that the drones actually act as beacons for communication, for observations, for sampling, weather sampling as well.
And it's solar powered, so it can stay there at a very, very low cost for a very long time.
Yeah, they could potentially remain indefinitely in the skies. Now, there are several companies that develop these technologies and these approaches, so there's some competition as well. And I think in a few years, we'll see a lot of this application actually happening in the real world and providing the services. However, I think there are other applications where technology really needs to catch up. For example, we can think of infrastructure maintenance. So not just infrastructure inspection as it is done today, but also interacting with the infrastructure, repairing it, maybe even manipulating the objects. So we have a project in our lab where we looked at pipeline repair using flying robots, where the drone repair patch on the pipeline to seal a leak.
Using what? Presumably it can't carry that much with it.
It can carry several kilograms depending on the size of the drone, but in our case it was polyurethane foam, which expands its volume, so by applying a very little material, it could patch a relatively large area. In a rescue scenario, we can imagine that drones would come and manufacture rescue shelters, for example, for people to be safe in. So not just go to actually look what happened and where people are and so on, but also to act on this information.
So an earthquake or a post-flood situation, you could send the drones in to build people housing that would protect them.
Yes, and in floods, we developed a drone for floods that can fly and also dive into the water and take water samples from underwater and then fly back to air and come back to the base station. So this type of multimodal drones or aerial aquatic drones, as we call them. In a flood in particular, there is a big danger of its sewage contamination with bacterial contamination. So we really want to know where people are in danger to then direct the rescue efforts there more quickly.
The picture you're painting, of course, but whether it's, let's say, Wi-Fi, broadband, telecoms delivery in poorer parts of Africa or in disaster situations, it is actually, interestingly, the emerging world that will see the benefit of this perhaps most rapidly in many cases.
I think it will be across the globe. It will be the emerging countries that will benefit from it a lot, I think, through delivery also, and medicine delivery, blood deliveries. There is this project in Rwanda recently that was shown that medicine can be delivered very effectively with drones. But also inaccessible areas such as the Arctic Sea or polar regions where drones can go that scientists today have very limited capabilities to actually see what's happening there. So a lot of environmental protection in the Arctic, but also in the rainforest, for example, can be enabled and made possible at all by drones.
Dr. Mirko Kovac speaking to me here on Business Daily from the BBC. So lots of development potential, but is there also a downside? The threat, for example, of drones being used by criminals, terrorists? Maybe, according to our regular tech commentator Jeremy Wagstaff of Reuters.
Dozens of startup firms are developing techniques from deploying birds of prey to firing gas through a bazooka to take on these unwanted UAVs. These companies are not, primarily, focusing on deterring your annoying neighbour from unleashing a drone at you across the garden wall, but at people using those same cheap off-the-shelf toys to smuggle drugs, drop bombs, spy on enemy lines or buzz public spaces. As these things get cheaper, bigger, and have better video streaming, they make a lot of sense for militants, criminals, or other non-state actors. The more of a threat these guys are, the more demand there is for anti-drone technology. The lack of clear-cut regulations feeds the arms race. Drones have been used to smuggle mobile phones, drugs, and weapons into prisons, in one case triggering a riot. One US prison governor has converted a bookshelf into an impromptu display of drones his officers have confiscated. Armed groups in Iraq, Ukraine, Syria, and Turkey are increasingly using off-the-shelf drones for reconnaissance or as improvised explosive devices. This is feeding demand for increasingly advanced technology to bring down or disable these unwanted drones. At one end of the scale, the Dutch National Police recently bought several birds of prey from a startup called Guard from Above to pluck unwanted drones from the sky. Other approaches focus on netting drones, either via bigger drones or by guns firing a net and a parachute via compressed gas. Newer startups, however, are focusing on cracking the radio wireless protocols used to control the drone's direction and payload, to then take it over and block its video transmission. These things look like mini radar installations, but they're getting smaller and more portable. One from Drone Vision of Taiwan resembles a rifle with two oversized barrels, coupled with a backpack, and blocks the drone's GPS signals and video transmission, forcing it back to where it took off. Clients, these startup companies say, range from intelligence agencies to hotels. Drone Vision, for example, helped local police down 40 drones flying around Taipei 101, one of the world's tallest buildings and a magnet for drone users. That was in a single day. In the Middle East, upscale hotels are talking to at least two companies about blocking drones from taking shots of their celebrity guests, lounging poolside or in the privacy of their bathrooms. But we're probably not about to see these products fall into the hands of privacy-loving homeowners. For one thing, a lot of this is illegal. Taking down a drone breaks anti-jamming laws in some countries, but then so does flying a drone in certain areas. So, in the short term, expect to hear more from companies that provide tools to help drone owners fly their craft more like real aircraft. But also expect those who see the drone as a way to smuggle, surveil, or attack others to become more ingenious, both at how to use this new device, but also to get around the rising tide of counter-drone technologies. The arms race above our heads will go on. This is Jeremy Wagstaff of Reuters for the BBC World Service.
So then, with all that, how much do drones need their wings to be clipped in legal terms? Lisa Ellman chairs the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Group for Hogan Lovells, a global law firm in Washington, D.C. She also used to advise the Obama administration on drone regulation.
There has been a regulatory vacuum. I think that slowly the federal government is taking steps to fill that vacuum, but it needs to move more quickly.
It's an incredibly complicated area.
Yeah.
And I think one could forgive legislators for taking so long over it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they've caught up now? Because there are so many areas, presumably, in which one could misuse a drone.
You know, we do need to move quickly. Frankly, without rules, there's just been a lot of misuse of drones. You know, the commercial drone industry wants rules in place.
What are the, for example, privacy rules around drones?
Sure. So any technology-neutral privacy law or rule out there would also apply to drones. So if I'm stalking someone with a drone, I'm still stalking them and violating, you know, peeping Tom statutes or stalking statutes. There are trespass rules and nuisance rules and other kinds of technology-neutral laws and rules that already protect us, including from drones.
Criminal activity. We're obviously seeing drones, and they've been widely reported to be used to ferry drugs across borders. We've seen that in Europe and North America, haven't we? Is there a point at which the technology referred to earlier of shooting drones out of the sky starts to become more legitimized?
Well, yeah, you know, all technology can be used for good and for bad, and really drones are no different. But there's also technology out there that can prevent the bad, and so security is paramount to the success of this industry. And so we also want to incentivize and enable the growth of the counter-drone technology market. And here, we're also seeing this regulatory vacuum that you mentioned earlier. There really is a policy vacuum here.
What should we see? What should we be seeing?
Yeah, well, so right now, you know, it's clear that we can detect and identify and track unauthorized drones, but then what can you do? And there are legal or policy issues that are raised with every solution. So shooting down a drone is not the answer. You know, you're introducing lots of new safety risks by shooting one down. Jamming a drone interferes with other signals, could run afoul of the FCC.
It could also be a security risk. I mean, it could fall out of the sky if you're jamming it, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Now, we've seen some are even training eagles to attack drones.
Wow.
You know, there's no shortage of ideas around this, but we do need guidance from the government on what is allowed in terms of counter-drone efforts.
Now, in the UK, Amazon, the online marketplace, is proposing delivering some of its parcels in a kind of pilot by drone. Now, obviously, there isn't a regulatory framework for that to happen yet in Britain, but that could change. Do you imagine drones travelling around literally at street level or just above street level in some organised kind of municipal sense? I mean, becoming the postman? Do you see that in the near future in the US?
I definitely see that in the future. I think one challenge here is we really need to develop highways in the sky, just like we have highways for cars, just like we have highways in the sky for manned aircraft. We need highways in the sky for drones.
And how do you police a highway in the sky, for example? How do you prevent, for example, a drone that goes off course flying off the road on that highway?
Right. Well, and that's where technology is key here, right? We need to incentivize the technology that allows, for example, drones to talk to each other and to talk to other vehicles and communicate with other vehicles.
Self-driving drones.
Exactly. Like collision avoidance technology.
Terrorism, of course, is the final one that people will be most scared of. And again, there, it's not about the laws, because obviously it's always going to be illegal to do the kinds of things that a terrorist might want to do. But it's about how on earth you stop it happening. How do you actually police that space?
Well, and that's where this counter-drone technology that we've discussed is incredibly important. The ability to be able to take over a drone or physically stop a drone where there are security risks is something that prisons are interested in, law enforcement, of course, in the vicinity of critical infrastructure facilities. This is key. And this is something that lawmakers and policymakers are very focused on.
Are you scared by this? Because I have to say, listening to some of this and imagining what might be possible, I can imagine that, as with so many other sectors, the technology proceeding a lot faster than our ability to handle it.
Frankly, I'm excited by this. I'm really excited by this. I think it's an amazing industry. I think that we can't even imagine what some of the best use cases are for the use of this technology.
The US lawyer Lisa Elman. More tech later today on the BBC when Tech Tent comes from the CES fair in Las Vegas. Roy Kecklin-Jones test driving cars and listening into some real-time language translating ear pods. Wow. This has been Business Daily. See you soon.